Hi everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
You're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
And we're carrying on with these lovely Disney remakes.
Yes.
This episode is 1994's The Lion King and 2019's The Lion King.
Woo! The live action.
Oh my god. it's bizarre to me because, you know, I'm going to start on the positive side. Some scenes are very pretty for the remake, and you know, with this growing of technology, CGI is cheaper.
Hmm.
It is easier for studios to make CGI movies than it is to make animated, because animation studios in the olden days used to get away with basically having foreign countries with less labor laws and less like minimum wage laws produce a lot of their content. With CGI, you can rely on people making models and, you know, it's just rendering time and computer power, which Disney has a lot available.
Okay, I'm going to launch into something here immediately then that I was going to save for later in the podcast, because I'm going to go into one of the pieces of trivia for this, right? Because I read this and it really made me feel angry, and you've just done the same thing.
Okay.
So, I'm going to read this word for word, right?
Okay.
When asked if the film should be called an animated or live-action film, director Jon Favreau himself could not give a definitive answer. Well, it's difficult because it's neither, really. It depends what standard you're using, he told reporters. Because there's no real animals and there's no real cameras and there's not even any performances being captured that's underlying data that's real. Everything is coming through the hands of artists. But to say it's animated, I think, is misleading as far as what the expectations might be. Disney has opted to treat The Lion King as a live-action movie. Encouraged by The Jungle Book's Oscar success, winning the special effects category, the studio is making a similar push for The Lion King in the visual effects categories. It's animated! What are you talking about? Jon Favreau was making no sense, you're making no sense, and both of you are discrediting hundreds of animators who have worked on these movies. Like, so many artists have put together what we just saw on screen, and, you know, and that's people doing the rigging who are part of the animation team, people who are making the models who are part of the animation team, people who are putting together storyboards and character designs and working out how all the muscles are working in these characters to make them look realistic but also still like an animated line. Like, does no one understand what animation is? Like, this is an animated movie. There is one shot in the entire movie that is live action. There is one shot. The whole movie, all of the backgrounds, all of the characters, all of the everything that happens in it is done by animators. And then Jon Favreau was saying, well, you can't really call it animated because animation's for kids. And you're like, oh, it's not animated, it's CGI. What do you think? Like, do you think a computer made it and that no people were involved? It's not AI generated. It's animated by animators. That's an animated movie. How can you sit there and say it's not animated? You just said it's, you know, these CGI movies are different or, you know, are more expensive than animated movies. What do you mean it is an animated movie?
No, I said the opposite of that.
No, you just said that these CGI movies are more are cheaper to make than animated movies.
Yeah, they are.
It is an animated movie.
Hand animation.
Yeah, that's a totally different.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Fish. But it's still an animated movie. There's still animators who worked on that.
Yeah, okay.
Hundreds of them. So many animators.
Yeah, I understand that. Everybody understands
that. No, they don't. Jon Favreau was out here. Reporters say, is this live action? He says, I guess it depends on how you look at it, but it's not animated. It's animated. It's an animated feature film. Why is Disney so afraid to say they're making animated movies? Disney, who are known for making animated movies. Like, they have this, it's like they have this concept in mind that they're making these live action remakes, and some of them are live action remakes, but this is not. This is not that. Nothing about it is live action. There's one shot. Literally, the opening shot was something that they filmed when they were researching. And that's the only sequence in the entire movie that features anything that is real. Everything else, every single detail for the entire rest of the movie was made by artists and was animated by animators. And it's baffling to me that the director of this film just can't credit those people with the work they did. That he's going out there and talking to reporters. And, like, I read the IMDb trivia. I'm going to remove the veil here. I've already seen the 1994 Lion King hundreds of times. I have seen it so many times. I grew up with it. We watched it for the podcast before, right? I didn't need a whole lot of a refresher on it. So I was like, oh, that's fine. I'll scroll through some of the IMDb trivia for the 2019 movie while we're watching the 1994 movie to save time, like, doing it in between movies or after. I started reading the IMDb trivia, like, right at the beginning of the 1994 movie, and I didn't finish till the end credits because there's so much stuff on there, and it's all nonsense. It's so boring to read about. It's just, like, they've told reporters about this. Half of it is just, this happens in the movie. Yeah, if I watch the movie, I'll know that. You don't need to put, that's not trivia. That's just a part of the movie. It's like they just oversaturated every angle with, like, telling people what's happening in the movie and why it's happening, instead of, like, just having interesting trivia. And so he's out there talking to so many reporters. There's so many interviews with Jon Favreau about this film. And yet, when he's asked, do you classify it as animated or live action? He's like, oh, I can't really classify it as either of those. Because you're setting up expectations if you say it's animated. Yeah, the expectation is that it's an animated film, which it is. And the expectation is that artists worked on this film, which they did. But he doesn't want to give credit to those people because he wants it to be like, this is my vision and it magically happened. I thought about this film and I directed it and it appeared. It is magic. It's just, these were real lines somehow. It's an animated film.
You done yelling at me in our audience?
I just don't get it. It just really annoyed me. I mean, you know, maybe that's coming... I mean, we've touched on this before. I do have a degree in animation. I have a lot of friends who are animators. Animators are so overlooked, just in general. People don't think about the amount of work that goes into, like, any animated film that you see. And to have the director of the film deliberately undermine that is just really frustrating.
Here's, let's pivot just slightly, just a couple of degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2019's Lion King was completely pointless.
Okay.
Just in general. It didn't need to be made. That's the end of the story. Like, it didn't need to exist. For me, it feels like Disney as a company trying to hold on to the IP licenses.
Yeah.
And I mean, just producing something that, like, you made the massive point on, that overlooked all the people who did the actual work of, just so they can print more money. Because these giant companies are treating the public as endless cash machines, they're ATMs.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, Disney is notorious for this, and especially in their animation departments, that they put people on two-week contracts. That they either, at the end of the 2 weeks, they either renew it or don't renew it.
Yeah.
So that they, no one ever has a notice period. You work your 2 weeks at Disney and hope that you get your next 2 weeks at Disney.
Yeah.
It's a monster of a corporation. Absolutely horrible. Treats its workers terribly.
Yeah.
And yet, so many people go to work there because it's so well known. You know, it is like the animation company.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of artists who would go to work there and are treated terribly, have a terrible time, are doing it for the passion of creating this art, and then are not even recognized for it. Ridiculous.
It's interesting watching this, which is a Disney movie,
mm-hmm.
versus watching anything made by Pixar that's not a sequel. Is that Pixar movies tend to have more passion and, like, whoever goes into the project isn't just there for, you know, the writing team. It's like, What do they write for this 2019 Lion King?
I think...
original story was stolen from William Shakespeare. Spoiler alert, it's Hamlet.
And it's bizarre because they have made changes. And those changes are positive, but I would have liked to see more changes. Because it's like, they'll make some changes and you're like, oh, that's an interesting decision. Yeah, it does make sense that the hyenas are actually a lot more formidable and not, like, stupid like they are in the original. Like, yes, the hyenas would be a real threat. And it makes more sense for Scar to come to them being like, hey, can we, like, work together rather than Scar leading the hyenas for some reason. But then they just do other stuff where they just do, like, word for word and it falls flat. And I don't want to say any of it is bad acting. I think there's definitely, like, for example, when young Simba was first talking, I was like, oh, this there's something jarring about this performance. But I don't think it's a problem with the actor. I think he was trying to match the energy of Jonathan Taylor Thomas in the original.
Yeah.
And he does a good job doing that, and then the animation just doesn't match it because it's like, you know, emotionless lion face.
Yeah.
not even giving as much emotion as actual cats do, because cats are very emotive. And yeah, I think, and there's moments where dialogue just doesn't hit, it kind of falls short, but it's usually, you know, in those moments where they're going word for word as it was. And the thing about it is that I know for a fact that they did multiple takes of these things. And, you know, and they would have different ways that they did it. And they did it, like, they rehearsed it like it was theatre, like, and they were in the room with each other and bouncing off each other, which is all great. And then somehow in the edit, the versions that they kept are, like, the blandest lines in some places. And I don't think anyone's doing a bad job in terms of the acting, because I think every performer in it has moments that are really good and then moments that are less good. And I have to believe that it's just, to some extent, is just that whoever is, editing and choosing which lines to then give to the animators to animate is just terrible at choosing them and has picked some really weird, bland deliveries. When, you know, there's some, it's a huge cast. There's some great talent in that cast.
Yeah.
The only person who I think consistently delivers constantly throughout the movie is James Earl Jones as Mufasa again.
Yeah,
yeah. He's like, oh, I know what I'm here to do.
Yeah, I've done this before.
And I think it's John Canny is the name of the guy who plays Rafiki. I think he does a decent job.
Yeah.
But I think that all of them do well with what's given to them. I don't think it's an acting problem.
The only cast member that stood out to me as being off-putting...
Was it John Oliver?
No.
Oh.
Well, because Rowan Atkinson's also weird in that placement.
Yeah.
Because why is there an African bird with a British accent?
I just already have bird-related beef with John Oliver.
Yeah. No, it's Seth Rogen.
I actually thought Seth Rogen did a decent job. No, not at singing. Is that what you were going to say?
It's...
He cannot sing.
Yeah. That's known. It is known. I think the problem is that Seth Rogen, to me, his performances are very physical.
Right.
You take any movie, even when he's not the main... I think my favourite example is the scene where he's trying to pretend to be normal in the back of the limousine in the night before. His physical... comedy is far better. Like, his laugh is iconic, his voice is iconic, everything he does is iconic. Maybe not the pickle movie, that was a bit weird, but like, his physical performances is what makes his characters memorable and his performances enjoyable. When you take that away and put it on a animated warthog, that I'm going to touch on what you said before. None of the performances feel as genuine, and maybe it's an edit issue, maybe it's a performance issue. For me, it just feels different because when you go from the hand-drawn animations, you can put a lot more comically, that essence of, of over-the-top, exaggerated, comical feel into the character animation. When you're trying to have, you know, CGI animals that are supposed to look like real animals, which they do. Like, all the parts where there's no dialogue, it's like, oh, I'm waiting for David Attenborough to start talking.
And that was kind of their goal. But, yeah, no, I get what you mean. Because when you have, like, Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella clearly doing just ad-libbing off each other and doing a comic performance, and then it's animated into these, like, really vibrant characters, it works.
Yeah.
And you have Seth Rogen and Billy Eichner trying to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And clearly, they have them in a room together. They're doing improv. They're acting it like it's a stage. But as Jon Favreau has pointed out in that quote I've already given, he didn't film them do this.
Yeah.
He didn't do any kind of mocap. He didn't do anything to, like, base the animals in the movie on what they were like. So it's just, like, it's them trying to riff off each other, and then it's just these, like, you know, realistic-looking animals standing there, or, like, weirdly, for some reason, because it feels sometimes like their dialogue is sped up. I feel like, again, it's an editing thing. I think they're just cutting the breaks in between people speaking.
Yeah.
So it feels like they're, like, almost talking over each other, but not in a natural way. But weirdly, they have Timon, like, every time he's, like, saying something that's clearly Billy Eichner trying to do some improv, trying to get the freedom Nathan Lane had to do some improv in the original. They have Timon just, like, doing stuff. Just, like, he's, like, trying to deliver this funny monologue or whatever, or like a bit, but Timon is distracted and picking at bugs or doing something else and not actually, like, acting like he's delivering those lines.
Yeah.
It's really weird. But I just wanted to say, because you were talking about The Night Before, there's a moment in it where Pumbaa is pretending to be live, or they're using him as live bait to distract the hyenas.
Yeah.
So he's running away from hyenas, just going, like, making weird noises, and all I could think of was Seth Rogen in The Night Before, where he's, like, as you said, he is high and pretending to be normal.
Yeah.
And he just keeps, like, screaming at everything.
Yeah.
It was a very similar vocal performance from him, yeah. But obviously totally different visuals.
Yeah, it was interesting because it just feels so unnecessary to me. And obviously you've with the massive amount of trivia you've ingested today.
It was so boring to read about.
You know about the prequel sequel, right?
The prequel sequel, yes. Yeah.
Which yeah, they was want supposed to make a come out in 2020 and won't be coming out till next year
because of just that.
The whole controversy around, well, we had COVID and the pandemic and lockdown and then the Actors Guild striking because they want money, which, you know, the executives are making millions and these guys are making pennies.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still going ahead with it. And it's like, okay, hypothetically, you have is the movie G? Is it G, general audience?
I think so. I don't know.
So hypothetically, you have 5 to 10-year-olds who have watched this movie in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
When the next one is released, which I think's December this year, they're going to be between 10 and 15. And it just seems very weird that they're, like, obviously they're banking on it to make money because they've spent money on it. But it just seems very weird. Like,
it's,
I don't know.
It's PG.
It's PG?
Yeah.
That might even change. That might be, like,
because of sequences of violence and some thematic elements.
What does that even mean?
I assume it means Scar is trying to they've leaned further into Hamlet than the previous Lion King, and Scar does try to take his brother's wife.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the movie.
Can I point out something? I don't know if I touched on it last time we covered this original story. Hamlet is really well written. You could put that into any genre and make a amazing movie or story.
Mm. Oh, that's the thing is that a lot of Shakespeare's works have, like, these very distinct tropes in them.
Yeah.
You
could have put, like, you could have made the hyenas an alien race and had it as science fiction and had a better movie than that horrible Rebel Moon thing that came out recently, you could, you know, slap that into any other, you could, medieval genre, well, obviously it's set in medieval, but I'm like, high fantasy
work. We are going to do other episodes in future that are other Shakespeare works that have been adapted to, you know, modern films. And it is fascinating the extent to which Shakespeare has been adapted into totally different genres. Yeah. You know.
It's a really good story.
The story of Hamlet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really well done. It's just a shame that in 2019, probably a lot of people's first experiences with the story is just this weird, unemoting lion movie. Don't get me wrong, what did we watch? Was it it's not Into the Wild. What was the other one we did with Madagascar?
The Wild. Yeah.
Awful. Yeah. The CGI was awful. And you take that movie.
If we compared just animation-wise, The Wild to 2019 Lion King.
Yeah.
Like, the leaps and bounds the technology has come on in that time is astounding.
The 2019 movie is gorgeous. It's gorgeous in a different way to 94's version.
And they did. It's not, you know, they made advances for that movie as well. It's like, there's quite a few films where, and it seems to be the same thing every time. No, I was going to say Incredibles, Brave, and 2019 Lion King all invented new technology to animate hair properly.
Yeah.
Because
hair
is so difficult to do. Yeah. Doing it for The Incredibles, the technology they invented to animate hair in The Incredibles was amazing. And it was because they couldn't get anything that worked with the, like, Violet's hair when she got wet.
I've seen the weird, like, test footage of Violet, and it looks like her hair is the girl from The Ring.
Yeah, yeah, but, like, it was specifically, I think, the sequence where they get wet and it's the wet hair, like, plastered against her skin. So well done. And then Brave, if you've seen Brave, her hair is like this painterly quality to it. It's this really light, bouncy, curly hair. And they invented new technology to do that. And then they've had to do the same thing with The Lion King, because obviously these animated lions' hair operates differently to human hair they've done in the past. And also they're trying to keep it this, you know, looking as real as possible. I just find it funny that it's always hair seems to be the thing that's like, okay, I guess we got to invent something new for it. So they've made advances in technology for it, and it is reminiscent of Avatar in that, you know, everyone knows my opinion of Avatar at this point, which is that, yes, it is pretty to look at, but where the hell is the story?
Yeah.
You know? And I think like with Avatar, they've kind of skimped on giving us engaging content to give us a pretty movie. And what's really funny about that is that that has really annoyed Jon Favreau, because his whole intention was to make it not be a pretty movie. He wanted it to seem real. So he's like, they invented new technology to give kind of a shaky cam, like, handheld look in CGI. And also,
shaky cam.
They created the entire set piece of, because in the original movie, the 94 movie, takes huge liberties with distance and location, and Pride Rock changes size about a dozen times, and it's not clear how far Simba goes or whatever, and they wanted to create a realistic world, so they literally had to build the entire world, including like 3 days walking distance for Simba to go out as far as he does to where he meets Timon and Pumbaa, and then further out from that to where they live.
It's like a multiplayer Minecraft
scene. Yeah, so they've made this massive virtual space. And then Jon Favreau used a VR headset to plan the shots, to, like, direct it like a director, like, what shots he wanted to have, you know, what angles he wanted to have, what way he wanted people coming in and things like that. Like, they literally made an entire virtual universe for them to go through, and all the actors got to use these VR headsets to kind of view what their character would be seeing when they were doing these things. And again, I don't understand why they didn't do some kind of filming of the physicality of what the actors were doing, because that would make sense, but, you know, whatever. But, like, you know, his whole thing was that we want this to look real and realistic and whatever, and he they literally had to design this new technology to do that. And he went in VR and scoped out his shots and his whatever, so he could direct it as if he was directing a live action film. All built in Unity engine, so I mean, that's the most fantastic use I've seen of Unity. But like that, then it just, people look at it and go, wow, pretty.
Yeah.
And I think if you wanted to make a movie that wasn't just pretty movie, you needed to actually, you know, do something with the story. And make sure that your performances were excellent, and make sure that the editing was excellent, and make sure that choices made sense in terms of the actions of characters while they're delivering dialogue. Because it doesn't. It just doesn't. So much of it falls flat.
Yeah.
And it's disappointing. Because I look at that film and I see so much potential.
And so much work that's gone into it.
So much work. Absolutely. Because, I mean, the amount of people who would have had to work on every aspect of that. You know, literally designing whole new ways to make film. I'm sorry about that noise that just happened, but I'm going to leave it in because it was mid-sentence. but yeah, designing whole new ways to even make films. And then, you know, the amount of artistry that's gone into it, the amount of, you know, technological work, and it's astounding. Just the sheer amount of people who must have worked on that film and the level of work that went into it. And I think it was 3 years of production, which is actually relatively short for an animated feature of that, you know, that caliber. But, like, yeah, to have all of that just... And it's the same with Avatar, because they also had to, you know, so much work that went into that film. To have it all just rest on not great filmmaking in the end, you know? And I don't have a problem with Jon Favreau generally.
Yeah.
You know, I love Elf. I liked the first Iron Man movie. I like the second Iron movie slightly less, but it did have Sam Rockwell in it, but that's a different story. I think it's just disappointing because it could have been a lot better than it was. I think they should have not... Because what our big problem with the Pinocchio remake was that they just word for word remade Pinocchio.
Yeah. and again, like I said, it just feels like they were just trying to protect their IP licensing. And yeah,
but it's stupid with The Lion King, because The Lion King, since it was made in 1994, has become an incredibly successful Broadway musical.
Yep.
Unlike
Cats, it went the other way.
Well, Cats is a strange musical to begin with, but The Lion King is a good musical, and there's additional songs in the musical that are well known, you know, even though they're not in a film form. And it's got this great tradition, and it's just like, it's a fantastic, so there's like, and you know, and it makes changes to the story that make it make more sense or be more realistic, or whatever. And like, I think they did lift bits and pieces from that, but like, you should have just gone and watched the musical a few more times and been like, oh yeah, we can do this. Like, you know, I got annoyed at one point because there's a moment where the bit, you know, the kind of iconic remember who you are moment from the original, where Simba, you know, has realized that the Pride Lands might actually need him, and Mufasa comes to him in the clouds and tells him that he needs to remember who he is and, you know, take pride in being from the line of kings and actually like go out there and do that work. And in the Broadway musical, there's a song called He Lives in You, which is a fantastic song. I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before because it's in The Lion King 2, the movie. They took it from the Broadway show and were like, oh, let's put this in The Lion King 2. And yet I was like, great, they can put this in this 2019 one. And then they didn't. And I was like, okay, I guess they're not going to do it. But then they put in an original Beyonce song. I don't care about an original Beyonce song. This is The Lion King. This is the moment where you're supposed to have He Lives in You, and you're playing some original Beyonce song. And it's clearly like a grab at like, oh, but we're Disney and we like to get the get a nomination in the Best Original Song category in the Oscars, and we can't do that if we reuse all our old songs and don't put an original song in.
That's something that's really annoyed me recently, because it seems to be credit songs.
Yeah, a lot of credit songs.
And, like, I like Billie Eilish, but I don't care that her song was the credits of a James Bond movie. Oh, you won an Oscar for it. It's like, Bond, yay, cool.
Bond songs are quite traditionally in that category.
But still, it's just like, you're just writing an Oscar nomination. You're not writing a song.
Yeah, and that's 100% what Beyonce did for this film.
Versus one of the earworm that is permanently stuck in my head now.
I'm Just Ken
is not only moves the plot forward, one of the best parts of the entire movie just from cinematically, and is a bop that I can listen to all the time.
Yeah.
Whenever I'm feeling, you know, and it works with so many other things.
And it's annoying Disney. This is going to come up a lot when we do our Disney remakes, right? Because I can tell you.
Can we just not do them? Let's just move on.
No, we're going to do Disney remakes. I know that you haven't seen a lot of them. There's a bunch I haven't seen. But one of the things I know about them is that every single one of them has a new original song in it. And clearly the reason is because all of those movies, when they came out first, you know, the actual animated films, the original animated films, had a whole load of original songs in them and all got nominations for original song, and quite a few of them won Best Original Song. And they can't get that nomination without a new original song, so then they just make up a new song for all of them. And it seems to be, in most cases, it's the love interest getting the song. So the Beast gets a song. Jasmine gets a song. In this one, it was Beyonce who plays Nala, but I don't think Nala was supposed to be singing that song. I think it's just coincidence. They're just like, yeah, we'll just throw that in there as a Beyonce song for the fun of it.
Having two singers playing the main characters in a musical does make sense.
Yes, 100%. And also, I want to shout out the kid who plays young Nala. Whose name I don't want to mix up. Shahadi Wright Joseph is her name.
Mm-hmm.
You will know her from Us. She plays the daughter in Us.
That's such a creepy movie.
It's such a creepy movie, and she is fantastic in that. But she also played young Nala on Broadway.
Right.
So they saw her on Broadway playing young Nala, and they never auditioned anyone else. They were like, "Hey, do you want to do this in the?" What's your schedule look like? But she's come out and said that she was delighted that Us came out first.
Right.
Because it means that most people's introduction to her as an actress on screen was in a serious role and not as a singing lion.
Yeah.
I think she did great in both. But again, another singer. And the guy who plays young Simba is clearly, he's got vocal chops as well. I'm not sure what his background is. I should find out his name since I just added her name. It's JD something, I think.
Yeah, something like that. But I've forgotten. I heard it somewhere.
I'll have it. Okay, JD McCrary.
Yeah.
Clearly a singer as well. But I agree with you. Having Donald Glover and Beyonce as Simba and Nala is great because it's so common, especially in, you know, older Disney movies, that they'd have a speaking voice and a singing voice who are two different people.
Yeah.
I mean, we just did Mulan, which had Donny Osmond and BD Wong as the same character. So, 100% agree. A good casting choice.
Yeah.
Except Seth Rogen, who can't sing.
Yeah.
Who they got Pharrell Williams in to be his vocal coach, and he said that Pharrell Williams was literally banging his head on the wall.
Yeah, I can imagine. His voice does not translate.
Billy Eichner did great as Timon, and he did good at that, like, still trying to be jokey, Timon, talkative, but then transition into singing, because he's clearly got a voice. I think he also does Broadway. So did Nathan Lane. Nathan Lane was a Broadway actor. What was I going to say?
I don't know.
John Oliver, though, does he even sing?
I don't remember.
It's like the lines that, because Rowan Atkinson doesn't do a lot of singing in it, but he kind of half sings his lines, whereas the lines that he half sings, I feel like John Oliver just said them.
Yeah.
And that annoyed me a little bit, but it's not like a huge deal.
I also prefer, like, Jeremy Irons' performance of Scar, I think is, I just like his voice better. He's more intimidating and more I just feel that it was
he's more comic. I think they tried to take the comedy out of Scar.
Yeah.
I think that just made him kind of emotionless.
That's what I found. Like, the actor who played Scar, which
Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Yeah, I wasn't going to try and pronounce that. Fantastic. Fantastic. I've seen many performances of that actor previously.
And yeah, just I think like,
wow, this person is an amazing actor.
I think he got it based on his performance as Baron Mordo in Doctor Strange.
Right.
Because that's him playing a villain.
Yeah. But it was just, yeah, watching the difference between Jeremy Irons' performance is just, yeah, like you said, just, there's a little bit. He comes off as harmless and very meek when he's talking to both Simba and Mufasa in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much like, you know, the cliche of giggling in the corner in the shadows, being like, aha, you know, puppet master kind of material.
Yeah, I think it's interesting though, because Scar as a character,
which is ruthless because he has a real name and everyone just calls him Scar.
Yeah, I know. But his whole, I think, doesn't his real name mean ugly or something though anyway? Like, he's got a terrible name either way. I can't remember what it was.
But is it Swahili? I can't remember. I can't remember what the languages that they train.
They use a few different African languages.
Because like Mufasa just means king, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And Scar, whatever Scar's actual name was, I think just meant, like, ugly or something. I'll try and look it up while we're talking, but, so the whole thing with Scar, and I kind of understand the interpretation they've gone with, because his whole kind of deal is that he thinks that he's super clever when he's really actually not.
Yeah.
So having a Scar who acts like, you know, oh, I'm going to manipulate these hyenas works for that, because the hyenas wouldn't answer to him. That doesn't make much sense in the original, and it works in the original just because it's, you know, it's a Disney made up thing. But it's, yeah, it doesn't work if you're trying to make a film that reflects any kind of realism, because hyenas just wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's only when he's like, oh, but, you know, you could eat me and have one meal, or I can help you get into the Pride Lands and then you can, you know, eat as much as you want. And I think that's the difference. But Scar in the original, as Jeremy Irons, has a lot of humor to him, and he's sarcastic and he's snarky. You know, very much plays this, like, tired, like, oh, I'm so fed up with all this. And then behind their back is like, I'm going to kill them.
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, because they take the humor out of him, he's just like, oh, okay, all right, cool, all right. And then he's like, hey, can you help me kill him? And it's like, wait, hang on. Where is, like, any of the fire here?
Yeah.
There's just nothing. There's no, you know, because the sarcasm lends into that whole thing, that you can see how bitter he is.
Yeah.
Whereas in the remake, he just comes across as tired, because they've taken that bite out of him.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's a weird.
Yeah, but like I said earlier, my entire problem with it is every single scene that started a new scene was just like, when's David Attenborough showing up? It just seemed they've put more effort into making the shots look good than the performances of the actual actors on. I was going to say on screen, but you know what I mean.
His name is Taka, which is a Swahili word for garbage.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. So he already. So like, his parents had two sons, and one named King,
and they were like, "Your name is garbage. King,
and this is your little brother,
garbage,
trash bag."
Yeah.
So you can understand why then. And then everyone's like, oh, you're the guy with the scar? Scar. And he's like, I guess it's better than a trash bag.
Yeah. Ruthless.
Yeah, yeah. So, I can understand why he's so bitter. But, they just take the fire out of him a little bit. And it kind of makes this character pointless to an extent.
Yeah. He's just the big bad guy for no reason.
Yeah, because, I mean, here's the other thing, right? Here's the thing. Here's my question for you about this remake. I understand that Shenzi is the leader of the hyenas because they are led by females. The females are bigger and stronger. I understand that she doesn't bow to Scar because she wouldn't, but that she agrees, you know, there's a mutual beneficial agreement here that we can do. I understand that she helps them kill Mufasa and allegedly kill Simba and take over the Pride Lands. Why does she then let Scar pretend he's king?
That's a good point.
Because surely, if these, you know, if we're saying these are our accurate portrayal of hyenas and, you know, whatever.
Maybe it's because they're using him rather than the other way around.
But using him for what?
To control the female lions, because the female lions would screw over the hyenas, because they'd, like, that's the thing that annoys me when it comes to this weird film portrayal of, like, actual living biological animals, is they get a lot of stuff wrong.
Yeah.
And it's like, within lions, within a pride of lions, you have a male, and the male's job is to fight off other males. That's right. All his job is.
Yeah.
The lionesses do all the work.
Yeah.
They raise the young, they do all the hunting, the male just, like, they, you watch any documentary.
And they touch on that in this, because because when Zazu comes and is like, the hyenas are in the Pride Lands, then he's like,
get the lionesses.
He's like, Sarabi's already out there dealing with them, I'm just letting you know as an FYI, you know?
Yeah, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
My opinion is that the hyenas are using Scar to manipulate the lionesses, because otherwise, without Scar being like, no, you can't, because I'm in charge of you.
Yeah.
They would just maul the hyenas to pieces.
I have a problem with the ending of this movie as well, which is that all the lionesses and the hyenas fight each other, and then they finally get rid of the hyenas. They're all going to be dead in a few hours or a few days. Lions don't fight creatures like that, because lions know, like big cats in general, have an awareness that if they get any kind of scratches, they're very likely to die.
Yeah.
Because they're so susceptible to infection, which is why, like, if a lion is hunting something that then tries to, like, attack it or swipe at it, the lion's like, no, not worth my time.
Yeah.
And leaves. So, also, hyenas have a much stronger bite than lions.
Yeah. They're really creepy animals.
Yeah, and super strong.
Yeah.
So, like, they were biting all these lions. These lions would have chunks ripped out of them. And, yeah, sure, they ward off the hyenas. But then, like, all of those lions are going to die of mass infection within a few days.
Not to mention the fact that, unlike the animated movie where Mufasa God intervenes and, like, replenishes the Pride Lands as soon as evil's been defeated.
Yeah.
It's not, because it's realistic. It's been years, and it has the same fire sequence, which is very, like, just, you know, fighting over a volcano-esque. And it's just like, oh, and then it rains and puts the fire out.
Yeah.
And it's like, cool. So you're, like, creatures who inhabit a very large area.
Yeah.
Because things migrate.
Yeah.
And wet season and dry season happen.
Yeah.
And they stay in an area where, like, you know, massive herds of animals move through.
Yeah.
And you're just going to be like, oh, cool, they're all gone. Like, all the herds are gone. It's been, like, basically a bunch of animals who were just be coming through the area have just been, there's no continuation. It's like salmon trying to go upstream when there's no river anymore because you've concreted it. They're doomed. They're all doomed.
I've just had a terrible thought.
Go on.
Which is that Timon and Pumbaa in this version live with a whole load of other creatures.
Correct.
And my thought is, do they repopulate the Pride Lands area with the creatures from Timon and Pumbaa's area? And then if that's the case, are the lions just, like, waiting for the right time to kill them all? They're just like, yes, Timon and Pumbaa, bring all your friends here. And then it's like, okay, time to start hunting some of these.
It's also the whole, I know it's supposed to be like, oh, what's a nice way of putting it? The circle of life mantra is garbage. lions eat the animals, and then when the lions die, they become grass, and the animals eat the grass, so therefore it's all fair and balanced. It's like, no, that's not what predators do for a population. And it's happened with the difference between conservation and just protecting animals is you get an area where it is a cycle, and coming down to how the actual physical landscape is just like, oh, well, they eat the grass and we turn into grass, so therefore it's all fair and balanced. It's like, no, 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 without animals to predate other animals, they will just like destroy everything. And you look at it from any introduced species into anywhere, you look at Australia and what happened there with the cane toads,
yeah.
Nothing can eat them, so therefore they've wiped everything out. And New Zealand had a huge issue with horses.
Mm.
And, well, we've had a huge issue with every single mammal that was ever introduced into New Zealand.
Yeah.
Rabbits, sheep.
Hedgehogs.
Hedgehogs. Rats, stoats, weasels, blah, blah, blah. Possums. Because there's nothing that can predate them.
Yeah.
And hawks, mate, falcon, whatever.
This is your ecological science lesson, kids.
Yeah. It's
if you introduce a species to a place that it's not originally from,
bad things happen.
Yeah, even if it's a species that's going to thrive there, that's bad for everything else that exists in that.
Australia is a really interesting study because now the Middle East import camels from Australia,
right?
Because they survive so well in Australia.
Yeah.
Obviously, I said cane toads, and like no animal can deal with it because they're everything's poisonous. Every part of them's poisonous. And animals try and eat them and then get poisoned. And then other animals eat the dead animals and they get poisoned and so on and so forth.
So they just destroy the whole ecosystem.
Yeah, and that's what predators do in the natural environment when mankind isn't importing things that don't belong there and not involved there.
I mean,
there.
This is a huge part of both Lion King movies.
Yeah.
Which is that, you know, when Mufasa is king, he preaches this circle of life. He understands that, you know, that they only get to live because they can prey on these other animals.
Yeah.
But those other animals only get to live because the grass grows. The grass only grows because animals are dying, you know, and there's this loop and everything is dependent on each other.
Yeah.
And then you get Scar coming in who thinks he knows everything, but in fact gets them to over... hunt.
Yeah.
And you know, and Sarabi points it out to him in the remake. There's a whole sequence that's not in the original where she's saying to him, look, you need to stop this because, you know, you're overindulging and we're over hunting and that's why everything is dying.
Yeah.
Because they are killing and eating way more than they need to or than they should need to. And as a result, there's no more animals left around, and because of that, you know, there's no The grass isn't growing the way it had before, you know, and like the whole ecosystem has been destroyed because they've just messed up this one aspect of it. And it really is, you know, to some extent an analogy for like what humans are doing in reality, which is that we are overusing resources and leading to the destruction of our own planet.
Yeah. But it's just my point that I was trying to make is it's very arrogant for Mufasa to be like, I'm the king and I'm in charge of everything and everything is under my rule. And it's very much like how humans have treated the environment.
Yeah.
Which is like, we're the smartest, we wear pants.
Except that Mufasa...
We pay taxes, therefore we can drill up oil and flood gulfs of Mexico
Mufasa,
with thousands of liters.
At least...
The pay difference... politicians to not put any sanctions on us.
The thing is that Mufasa and Scar both share that belief. But Mufasa at least has respect for the natural order of things.
It's still arrogance.
It is. It's definitely
because
you wouldn't
have an antelope being like, oh, you know, it's the circle of life, guys. Lions eat us, but we eat grass, and the lions, when they die, eventually turn into grass. So it's all fair.
And they touch on that in the sequel with or not the sequel, the remake with Timon being like, what, I don't know what this circle thing is. It's a line. You're here and then you die.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
but the concept of the circle of life, I think that Mufasa doesn't understand it completely, but it is still more valid than the line theory in that, like, everything is interconnected.
What was the movie we watched yesterday with Paul Giamatti in it, where he played the teacher at the school?
The Holdovers.
The Holdovers. There was a sequence in that where he talked about what life is like a chicken ladder.
Mm.
Far too short and covered in poop. And I was just like, that's a great analogy. Yeah, it's just, it's weird because, again, the circle of life, you could use it for so many other placements of just how people at the top are arrogant about everything else.
Mm.
And it also kind of feels like what had led up to the writer's strike.
Right.
Where instead of lions, it's executives being like, oh, no, 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 we eat the writers and then they poop out movies and then it's all fair because eventually, you know, they get money, but, like, it's not much money as we do.
Yeah.
So you should be happy with your... And it's people who, like, are in love with multi-billion-dollar companies. They don't care about you.
Yeah.
And it really shows with a Disney movie that wasn't needed... who have basically turned around and said none of the actual people who put their heart and soul into this movie are going to be credited for it, and we're just going to run away to the bank because kids' movies make money. It doesn't matter how ridiculous or overused their storylines are because people are tired, and instead of entertaining your children because we all eat processed sugar, you can just throw your kid in a movie theater for 2 hours so you can take a nap.
Do you want to talk about money?
That made lots of it. End of story. The writers got none. The actors got more than the animators did.
What do you think the budget was for
the original? The
oh, we can do both.
Well, I'm assuming it was like hundreds of millions for the original, and it made like 500. But it was probably like 200 for the first, and maybe like 500 back or 700 back. But then again, you're not taking into account what George Lucas did, which is like all the merchandise, which would also be owned by Disney, all the direct-to-DVD sequels, so it's all part of the whole same giant pot of money that they swam in and then paid nobody anything else of.
Okay, so the budget for the original was $45 million.
Yeah.
And it made $968 million.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is...
ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, to be a successful movie, you want to make 200% of your budget.
That's ridiculous.
And what to be successful, you want to make 200% of your budget, as in you want to double your budget, so you get your budget plus the same amount on top, right?
Yeah, so if your movie cost $1 million, you'd want $2 million.
Yeah, back. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for the original, comparing that $45 million to $968 million, that's 2,151% of the budget that they made. For the remake, what do you reckon on budget and box office?
I just said it was 200 and 500 back.
Oh, I thought that you said that for the original.
Oh, so, yeah, no, sorry, yeah.
For the remake.
For the remake, the same answer.
You think it made the same, you think it was the budget was the same for the remake?
No, I'm saying like it would probably cost $200 million and probably made like 1.7 back.
So, a budget was $260 million.
So, yeah, it was pretty close.
And it made $1.66 billion.
So, yeah, I was so on the money. You were
pretty much on the money there. That's impressive. It made $191 million on the opening weekend.
Yeah, because kids like movie.
And it dethroned Frozen as the highest grossing animated movie of all time.
But it's not animated, it's live action.
Is it? Is
no,
it?
No. It's just so they don't give credit to the animators.
Pretty sure it's an animated movie.
It was just, I stand by the fact that it was unnecessary, and it's very pretty, and that was it.
Like, yeah, that's fair.
The voice acting's great, but the performances are fine. It's just they don't match what's happening on screen.
Yeah, which is a shame.
Yeah, just watch the 94 one. It's better in every regard.
Yeah, pretty much. I do like the look of the animals, though. Like, I like what Rafiki looks like in the remake.
Yeah, yeah,
I
think he looks everything cool. Looks really good, except for when they talk. When they talk, it's weird.
It's the lack of emotion. And they do it sometimes, because, like, the scene where Simba sees the stampede coming, or hears it, and you see, like, his ears flicking, and you can see the fear in his eyes. And I'm like, oh, cool, they're doing something. And then that's, like, the most emotion that we see in the entire film.
Yeah, Rafiki has the most emoting, but that's because...
Wait, yeah, Rafiki is cool, though.
Because, what are they?
He's a mandrill.
Yeah, they look human, so you can put... It's like the...
I think they could have done so much with Timon, though. I feel like Timon could have been very... Like, meerkats are very emotive. Maybe not in the face, but, like, body language-wise. Yeah, yeah. And his body language never matched up with what he was doing.
Yeah, and never dressed up in a hula hoop skirt.
No. Well, that was an ad-lib. That was an improv by Nathan Lane that they decided to animate because they thought it was funny.
I was about to make a very valid point, now I can't remember what it was. Sorry. It's okay. Continue talking and I'll try and remember it.
Alright, I can go into some of the trivia. I didn't take down any trivia from the original because we've already done that.
Okay.
We've covered it in a previous episode. What's annoying me now though, looking at it, is how much Jon Favreau's name comes up in the trivia that I have taken down. So he brought back James Earl Jones because he saw it as... Why? There's just quotes from him. There's so many quotes from him. He must have just talked incessantly about this movie. Anyway, he said, "I see it as carrying a legacy across. Just hearing him say the lines is really moving and surreal. The timbre of his voice has changed. That served the role well because he sounds like a king who's ruled for a long time." Yeah, so there's 1,490 rendered shots created by animators and CG artists. And then one single shot of Africa at the beginning. It's the very first shot in the movie. I think I already mentioned that they rehearsed it like it was theater performances, and they performed it like theater, and then did like improv and ad-libbing on top of that. And especially, for example, Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen did a lot of that together, and they did record their lines together. You know, which with Nathan Lane and Ernie Sabella did in the original as well, record their lines together. So it's, they're trying to get that camaraderie, I guess, across. Despite all the meticulous anatomical detail, the animal models do not have any reproductive organs that we can see in the movies. Because Disney, I guess, said, no, to that.
Yeah, because otherwise it would end up the same scandal as the butthole cut of Cats.
Yes, that's exactly what I thought of.
That's what I want to bring up. Strider.
Cats. Oh, Strider, yes. I was going to say, like, can you guess what my favorite part of watching the movie was? And it was how much Strider loved watching the
lighting. Yeah, he just sat on our coffee table and was just staring at the screen for, like, 20 minutes. I've never
seen him so engrossed in a movie before.
Yeah.
He, like... he got up and, like, walked across in front of the screen. It was the scene with the stampede and, or just after the stampede, and Simba's going down to find Mufasa dead. It was very sad, but I was, like, giggling through it because Strider was, like, standing, like, at the screen watching Simba and, like, right up close. And then he got down and got up on our coffee table to just sit and stare at, like, the bird, you know, Simba runs away and then there's buzzards or vultures circling him and Strider is, like, staring at the birds and then watching Timon and Pumbaa run up and, like, head darting around and, you know, Scar with the other lions and stuff. Like, he was there for ages. Yeah. I got a couple of photos. I can put them on Discord when the episode goes up. But, yeah, he was, like, so into it. He was way more into the movie than I was. That's literally the best thing about that movie was how engrossed our cat was in the movie. That's like, I've never seen him like that with anything else we've put on. Has there been anything we've watched that he's done that? He used to watch you playing RimWorld.
Yeah.
He was a fan of RimWorld.
But that's because there's a lot of, like, he...
Little moving parts.
He will sit and watch stuff when I'm playing games because I think it's the quick movement of, like, curses and mice.
Yeah, he does like watching a cursor move around.
And I have caught him watching videos on my phone. Like, he'll sit in, like, a crook of my arm and be staring at the screen. I don't know if he's actually watching or just, like, you know, it's the only thing that's, like, moving.
Yeah, But I've never seen him just sit in front of the TV like that.
Yeah, because he's never been... Even when we got him, because you had all those weird cat games on your phone when he was a kitten.
Yeah.
And he just basically, stared at the, like, little weird mice or the... lizards or whatever. He'd
watch them moving around, but
then wouldn't interact with them.
Yeah.
It's very interesting behavior that the person out of the audience of the three of us, it was Strider the cat who was enjoying the movie the most.
Yeah. He was like, that's me on the screen. I'm the Lion King.
Yeah.
It's me. Yeah, he was very cute. Was that the really good point you were going to make?
Yeah.
What was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So the biggest reason they changed... Because they changed Be Prepared. Is totally different. They cut it down and they changed the lyrics. And the lyrics really felt like a stretch to me. It didn't work for me. But I do love the original Be Prepared. Though I ruined it for myself the last time that we watched The Lion King for the podcast, when I found out that Jeremy Irons strained his voice halfway through it and then Jim Cummings takes over the rest of the thing. Because now every time we watch it, that's all I can hear is that suddenly it's Jim Cummings.
Right.
But it's still way better than the remake one. But they changed it because most of the lyrics were insulting the intelligence of the hyenas and talking about their dependence on Scar, which obviously is not applicable in the new movie. So they just changed the lyrics around to it to fit the new portrayal of the hyenas, but it's still just a really weird song. It just comes across really strangely.
Yeah.
In the stage production, so the Broadway musical, Scar pursues Nala to be his queen, but in this version they chose Sarabi, which keeps more in line, as I said, with Hamlet.
Yeah.
And
less with the biology of lions, but anyway. They would have all been mauled to death. Sorry, spoiler alert. Lions are ruthless.
Alright. Well, that's about it. So, unless you have more that you'd like to add, we can...
Learn about lions. They're ruthless. Actually, learn about African wildlife. Yeah. It's
learn about hyenas.
Yeah.
They're also ruthless.
Yeah, and they have a... I was going to say monarchy, but that's not the right word. Not the opposite of patriarchy.
Matriarchy,
yeah.
Which they do reflect in this film.
Yeah.
They have that. They have Shenzi as... You know, an actual matriarch.
Yeah.
But
what they do with that is something I won't describe on the podcast. Because you have to learn it from an educated scientist instead of just some random guy who watches movies a lot.
So, children, if you're listening and you want to learn more about lions, don't watch The Lion King. Watch some really good nature documentaries. Yeah. Ask your parents. They'll be able to find you some nature documentaries that deal with lions and you can see what real lions are like. Or go support your local zoo. If you've got a good zoo in your local area.
A good zoo. Not a good zoo from Madagascar.
Yeah, because some zoos don't take...
Animal presence.
Yeah, some zoos don't take care of their animals very well. So make sure you go to a zoo that takes care of their animals. Your parents will be able to look up online and find a zoo that takes care of their animals. And then go and pester the zookeepers. Find a zookeeper, ask them all your questions. I know you've got questions. Kids have lots of questions. Zookeepers love to hear your questions because they really love talking about the animals. So don't be afraid. You can stand there, you can talk to the zookeepers and ask them as many questions as you can think of, and they will tell you all about the lions or about the other animals in the zoo. That's my recommendation.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of orangutans. If you can find a zookeeper who'll tell you about orangutans.
I'm a big fan of tigers, and I got to walk one years ago. And
yeah.
It was very special for me.
Kids, if you live in Australia.
Yeah, you have the best zoos in the world.
Ask your parents.
They aren't animal prisons.
Ask your parents to take you to Australia Zoo. Yeah. It's really good.
Steve Irwin's son, like, living in his footsteps. It's great.
And if you can't afford that, watch some Steve Irwin, TV shows or documentaries. I don't know the extent to what kind of stuff. He did like a mix of things.
He did do some BBC stuff? Yeah, BBC stuff seems like the Planet Earth series, that kind of like I've got several of them on DVD. I think I've actually got them on Blu-ray, like
Netflix,
Africa and stuff.
Netflix have some documentaries. Yeah. If you've got Netflix, you can watch some documentaries on Netflix.
Yeah, there is more to educate... For the parents out there, for the young parents out there, there are more to educate and keep your kids busy than, you know, the weird garbage that's catered to them by companies who make millions of dollars off ad revenue.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've got Netflix on your iPad. If you get an iPad,
buy an
your
encyclopedia.
Child.
Yeah. It's what I did.
What did we do? We had, not McCarthy, what was it, the weird one on the computer when we were kids? Not when we were kids and knew each other. I'm saying like
I had Encarta. Yeah, Encarta. You had as well? Yeah. Encarta Encyclopedia. It's fantastic. Yeah. I learned so much from that.
Yeah.
I would like literally, I would find pages that were interesting to me and I would print them off and read them. So I had like printouts of like just facts about fennec foxes and things like that. Like, it was just so interesting. There's so much that you can... Because those were aimed at kids, I think, the Encarta Encyclopedia.
Yeah, they were in the school computers.
Oh, I didn't have them in school computers. We had one at home.
Like I said, New Zealand was like, until later on, we were like 10 years behind everybody else.
Right. Well, I mean, when I went to primary school, we had one computer in the school.
So we had one computer in each classroom, I think.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, we had one computer in each classroom.
What kind of years are you talking about there? When was...
When I was at primary school. So
earlier than me then.
Yeah. No, wow. I was at intermediate.
I don't know.
In between primary school and high school.
Okay, so it's probably around the same time that we had one computer in my school.
And because I was so good on the computer in comparison to the rest of the classes, I had to. I volunteered, but it wasn't really volunteer. I remember this. This is like a genetic memory of this unlocked. The kids in the younger class had done a bunch of creative writing, like short stories. And they got me in to that class to type them out on the computer and print them out. And the font they liked was Comic Sans.
Kids loved Comic Sans. All of it was in
Comic Sans.
I remember awful. Having, because we had the one computer in the school. It was near like the reception and nurse's office and all those things were all in the one spot. But we had a computer at home, which like most kids in my school did not have. So the nuns used to like come and get me out of class if something went wrong with the computer to see if I could fix it. I was like a 7-year-old child.
We've tried praying and it doesn't work.
Yeah, it's like, well, let's go find that Lisa kid. Because they knew I had a computer at home. So I had some idea of how to work a computer.
And before anybody reacts, it's not because of... You know, Lisa grew up super wealthy. It's just because that she lived in a household where her parents needed a computer for reasons.
Not really. I neither of those things. I didn't grow up super wealthy, but I don't think we really needed a computer at that point.
Oh, yeah, because I guess the line of work that your father was in was probably more...
Oh, he needed a computer, but at work. He didn't have one at home. But he just was really interested in the idea that these were going to be the next big thing.
Yeah.
And my mom was like, I don't know about that. And now here we are. So I think my dad like saved up to get a computer. Like,
you're possibly listening to us on a device that was more powerful than NASA was.
I think we had, I think on our first computer we had Windows 3.1. I don't think we had a computer that was just DOS. But we did play DOS games on it and like floppy disk games and things. But I think it was Windows 3.1. It was definitely... We had a computer before we had Win 95. So I think 3.1 was the one. Yeah. I'm old.
We old.
We old.
I'm older. We old.
That's true.
Thank you for joining us on this remake episode of our podcast. You can find us in places. You know, we have our own website. It has bios. You can find the Discord. The Discord's great. Come hang out. Talk to us about how you feel about the episodes. If you want to accuse us of things, do it. Just join the Discord and talk to us.
Yeah, join the Discord. Accuse us of whatever you want.
Yeah.
If you go to ittakes2.co.nz, that's our website, and it's got all the links on there, and also the links will be in the show notes for the episode.
Yep. Thank you for joining us. Catch you next time.
Goodbye.